I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Seen, the podcast. Shame sits in the body and restricts the flow of love. That's a quote from Yolo Akili that's really been sitting with me as I thought about this episode. Our question this week is, what part of yourself do you keep hidden? And to me, shame is the thread that weaves that question together. I don't know if you agree with that, but maybe that's something we will explore as we talk about this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. I mean, shame, guilt. Can you say that quote one more time? Like, I need it to penetrate my soul a little bit more.
Yeah. Shame sits in the body and restricts the flow of love.
So yeah, that is the thread of this question. And when you asked me this question, you told me we're going to talk about this. I was like, I guess we're going to be airing our shit out. I guess that's the theme for this podcast format now, is like, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's good.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to dive in.
Okay.
And ask you, what is a part of yourself that you keep hidden that you're willing to be vulnerable and air out right now?
Okay, so the part of myself that I keep hidden is the part of me that actually wants to indulge and wants luxury and wants comfort, like creature comforts, and wants the type of stability that I feel like our generation and generations after ours really scoffs at, as like, we're never going to achieve that or accomplish that. And so, yeah, like, I don't really like talking about that. I think I've begun to in my like close circle, like with you guys. I feel like you guys, meaning you, Lala, not listeners, but now the listeners know. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've told you sort of my desires for my future and what I want. But I've also felt nervous about even doing that with friends, right? Like, how do you, especially friends of mine who share that sentiment of like, the world is on fire and we're all going to go, like, what's the point of us wanting the comfortable things in life? Like, being able to not pay rent and have some sort of like ownership over, like basically being able to buy rent control for yourself. It's like, that's what I see like owning a home means. And I recognize that that's also associated with, you know, where we exist and how we're on stolen land. And I don't, it's hard. Like, I think all of us want that stability of rent control, really, you know? And more than that, and more importantly, it's like wanting a family, like wanting to have kids and like wanting sort of that. I don't know. It just feels like it's like less cool to say in our generation. So now we're going to talk about that. How about you? Or are you going to ask me questions? Because you normally would ask me like 10 follow-up. Yeah, you're ready.
I am going to.
Okay. Here we go.
You know me so well. I'm going to ask you many follow-up questions.
Uh-huh.
You will also have your opportunity to do that to me.
Excellent.
But I guess I wanted to ask, well, 9 or 10 more things, including.
Oh, God, please don't.
I'm just kidding. Am I?
Oh, man.
Well, you alluded to it, but I want to hear more about why. Why do you hide that part of yourself? What would you be risking if you were to let that part of yourself be seen?
I mean, some of that feels selfish. Some of it feels like audacious, like how dare you. I think it's self, it's like me to me, like no one said this to me, like how dare you want that for yourself. Like whenever I have told anyone about what I actually want most or the future that I imagine for myself and my family and my partner, no one's like, that's corny. But maybe, or perhaps, or certainly, take your pick. It's like this feeling like you're not one of the homies anymore. Like there's something that you're giving up, like the collective struggle of like shared identity of kind of art. Again, it's a generational thing. I think especially with millennials, we've been told for so long, like we are ruining capitalism. Like we're never going to be able to own a home. Avocado toast. And it's like, how dare you want those things that people are telling you are impossible to achieve, for one. And I think if I was also being really honest, sometimes it feels like there are certain sacrifices that are expected of people who try to live their values out loud and say their values out loud, who identify as abolitionists, who identify as people in the community who are grassroots. And there's this expectation, and you can't uncouple that from misogynoir and, you know, racist misogyny for you. Like, I think it affects racialized femmes and women specifically, and you're nodding your head, so I think you agree with me, but it's like this feeling of like, oh, we're supposed to struggle. And I was just talking to my friend about this on video call yesterday, and they were like, this idea that we're supposed to struggle is like the biggest con. But I want to talk about that later. But yeah, I think those are the two big reasons. It's like, one, you feel like you're opting out of the club of like, you know, people, not even the club, just like the generational theme that everyone in your cohort is really experiencing, which is this crisis of like, what is the fucking point of wanting those things? Or does that make you materialistic? Does that make you a capitalist? That does that, like, there's so many things that make this desire feel tenuous and perhaps, you know, running counter to your supposed values. And I just, to that, I have to say, I think it's more complicated. And I really urge all of us, including myself, to like really smash the binaries in our head that say it's either this or this. Like there's so much more nuance. And I think that our like abundance that we're craving, that I'm craving, is somewhere in the nuance, but I gotta be real. Yeah.
Totally. And it's so interesting because I feel like on this podcast, you have always been such a voice for not denying yourself things, you know, for like being, you know, allowing yourself to have abundance. And I guess it just makes me think about how much shame makes us the exceptions to our own
values and beliefs and values every day. Yeah. Every day. Yeah. Totally. And I mean, even as you just said that, like, I try to be generous with myself. I say a lot of shit that I have a hard time practicing. I'm going to be real. It's hard. Like, I continue to have that feeling of like, can I really speak this out loud? And then I realize that this podcast and so much of the conversations that I have with you and with other close friends is like not just me saying things at my friends, but speaking the words that I need to hear for myself in the hopes that they will say, yeah, that's it. So then I can believe for myself, because that shit is hard to just believe on your own.
Totally. And I mean, for those of us who do want change in this world, we're always going to be talking about things that are hard for us, because we're talking about, you know, worlds that we're trying to build and, you know, things we're trying to unlearn and undo and rebuild. And of course, it's hard for us too. That's the whole point.
Yes.
Is how difficult systems of oppression make these things. And so maybe I'll transition, because I feel like that point of like talking about certain things ad nauseum, like for a living, and then struggling with them yourself.
Oh, you want to get into it? Yes, it's your turn.
Yeah, I feel like that is, hello.
You're feeling
I'm Lala,
it.
And yes. I have a problem. with this. So yes. It was funny because I asked you, I was like, okay, I have three things I'm thinking about. Which one of them surprises you the most?
Yeah.
Fully expecting you to be like, you are fooling no one. None of these are the slightest bit surprising.
I mean, I think that I know you really well, but some things were like, one was more surprising than the others.
That was right.
Weird. Yeah.
Yes. And so, but it's interesting because then I was like, wait, they're all kind of the same. So the first one was...
Let's pull it up. Let's get the receipts. I definitely have it here somewhere.
No, I got it.
You remember what your own...
The brain fog.
You suppressed it so hard that you just didn't want to tell us on the podcast. We get it. No, it's brain fog. Go.
The first one was that I have very intense emotional reactions to pretty much everything, including very mundane daily things, because I usually perform being easygoing on the outside in a lot of ways. In some ways I don't, but in some ways I definitely do. And then secretly have this like intense, blame Mars and Scorpio. That's what I'm going to blame.
You have Mars and Scorpio?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Conjunct Pluto. It's intense. It's intense.
Bitch, you never told me this before. You've only been reading my chart for forever, but I've never had full access to yours. And I have
you
to
can
say,
have my chart.
This is a very imbalanced friendship.
I will send it to you right now.
I would
not
like
right
to
now.
See
I'm busy,
it.
But I will
like
send
to
it to you.
Thank you.
Tonight, I swear.
Thank you.
Hopefully, Drew supports me blaming my chart.
I want
for
them to be
my
like,
personal.
That's not it.
difficulties. So that was the first one. The second one was feeling very overwhelmed by my career and feeling out of my depth a lot of the time. That was the one you said was most surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. That surprises the shit out of me, because you're just the way you move about your business is like you carry yourself so well. So I'm like, wait, what? We're all pretending? You were pretending? Anyways, go on to the third one.
Does that just mean that all of us are pretending all of the time?
Yes.
Imagine. Mm-hmm. And the third was how much being a survivor of sexual violence affects me daily.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I really realized after posing this question to you that it's all the same thing. And it's all hiding a certain kind of vulnerability. Like, it's all of these feelings that could be considered weak, you know, or could be sort of used against me, or, you know, it's like, and this is where the the dissonance between what we say and what we believe for other people and what we practice for ourselves comes into it, because I am a whole entire therapist.
Yeah.
So obviously I don't think it's weak to have feelings. And I spend so much of my professional time telling people from the absolute like core of my being that your feelings do not have to be rational. And it is really okay to be extremely angry about something that is like, you know, objectively maybe not really a big deal, or
right,
you know, that it's okay to be really overwhelmed, and that doesn't mean that you're incompetent, or it doesn't mean you won't rise to the occasion when you need to, or
mm-hmm.
it's okay to still be hurting over something, and doesn't matter how many years ago it happened or mm-hmm. whatever else. It's like, I 100% believe those things, and then I find myself performing strong and performing fine and have it all together.
Right. You know, when you just said about that it's like a vulnerability thing, the first thing that came to mind is like this fear that people will see you as softer than you actually are. And I feel like that's, if that resonates for you, that's what it feels like for me in terms of the thing that I keep hidden, is that like I think I can come across as like put together, and you really come across as put together. Like, I know that there's a part of me, and I'm wondering if this is true for you, where it's like not wanting folks to be able to like crack open your armor and see how soft you actually are and how like much you are like potentially insecure or needy or all of those things that I think both of us have worked really hard at making sure people never see us like that. It's like the never let people see you sweat mentality. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because at first you said, you know, people seeing you as softer than you actually are. And I was going to say,
tell me,
I actually think the feeling is, and you, then you said it, is seeing how soft I actually am.
Right.
But maybe collapsing or flattening me into only that
is the fear.
Is the fear. And I think especially because I feel like when I was younger, I was very much seen as very like weak and like fragile. You know, like I was one of the kids who would cry at school sometimes, like much later than other kids did.
Like age-wise, like you were like more kind of like openly emotional.
Yeah, it's right. Like, I, you know, there's like me and one other person in the class, and we're the, you know, the ones who like sometimes still cry, and it's like, you know, the fifth grade or whatever. And
okay, everybody, gotcha.
You know, other people aren't really doing that anymore.
Right.
Or even like as an adult, I felt that way for a long time at my serving job. It was like a really intense, high volume serving job. And for the first like several years, I often felt like very, well, I felt very overwhelmed
the whole entire time. Yeah.
But I think in the last couple of years developed more of the ability to kind of have the persona to like play it off and handle it in a different way. And when I really thought about this, I realized I think there have been, you know, for most of my life, I've felt like I haven't had the kind of support that I've needed reliably. And that was really, really painful and hard. Mm-hmm. And I felt like not only did I have to experience the pain of that, but I also experienced shame from other people kind of seeing that, you know, seeing me struggle.
Yeah.
And eventually I kind of was able to develop this strong persona so that I could rely on that instead of other people. Hmm. And that's felt easier. It's like I haven't had to fear as much in so many different ways since developing that. But of course it comes at a cost.
Yeah, it's like a defense mechanism that eventually like catches up with you and you realize you're, I mean, it sounds like you end up realizing you've like denied yourself the thing that you actually want the most, which is the space to be able to just be that, as opposed to shutting it all the way off. Or it's not shut all the way off, but people aren't able to read that on you anymore. And it makes me curious. It's like, that feels connected to, I don't know what it is for me in terms of, cause I have to go back to like childhood or things that happened as a kid. That's my first, place in my mind that I go to, is like how are those things paired up or connected? And for me, I'm like, I mean, I certainly had people around me, but I don't think that I felt stable. Like, I don't think that I felt like our family unit was stable and secure, and I didn't feel like we had I didn't know that we had enough. I think I always felt like a crisis was on its way. I always felt like, you know, don't get too excited or too happy about this because something's going to happen. Like that sort of lurking thief of joy that became really just the way that I existed. And, you know, looking at sort of, you know, natal chart and sort of things around my like north and south node, it's really interesting because I realize that for me, I have tried to just be like pretty Spartan, like I don't need things. I am totally okay to be sort of like bare bones. And I think I've taken pride in that because I felt like that was something that I watched my mom do a lot. But then I see how she will struggle with indulging, quote unquote, and taking care of herself and luxuriating. And it makes me frustrated with her because I'm like, you've worked so hard. I want you to not feel guilty about that. I want you to be able to have the nice things that you, that I think that I feel you deserve. And I wish that you felt like you deserved them too. And she would always kind of be like, oh no, not for me. Like not for me, not for me. That's for somebody else. And so, yeah, I just, anyways, you talking about childhood and the way that people didn't create that space for you and denigrated that response with your emotions just made me think of like, I think I had the lack of that, a lack of my own version of that too, you know? And so it's like kind of craving what you were denied, but then also having a complex around it because it's like, well, what my biggest question, I look back at my journals for years and girl, the biggest question that I ask myself in many different ways is, what does it say about me that? Insert the question. It's like so much self-judgment, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you saying that about your mom, it really made me think how often are we not realizing that the thing we are guarding against, you know, the bad thing that we're afraid of, it already happened and it's in the past. You know, because it's like, you know, your mom, she had to work so hard and go without and all of that, and it sounds like now she doesn't have to, but she's still in that sort of in mindset. That mode.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's, you don't have to do that anymore. And then it's interesting with you because, you know, at the beginning you were saying maybe part of why you hide these wants about yourself that you have are because of, you know, not fitting into the millennial generation and feeling like as someone with certain values, it's not okay to want these things. But it's like when you now trace it back to your childhood, does it make you realize that the fear is maybe even, those things might be a part of it, but maybe the fear is deeper than you had realized?
Oh my God, it's so much deeper than that. It's like those two reasons that I initially said that you just repeated back are like, I think, way more surface level. And they do play a factor, they, you know, they play a role, but it's definitely more about like, I think that there's also just the sense that like, and the big question of like, how dare I want that thing? Like it, feeling like that is an affront to something. And I don't even know what, because I look at this photo that I have of me from like the sixth grade and I'm like, what would she want right now? Like, what would that Nick aspire to? If she saw me struggling in this moment about this thing, about these feelings, like, would she be like, you idiot, like that's all we've ever wanted, why would you deny us this thing? And how come I can't center or at least just pay attention to that voice that is like such a, I would say, and I don't think I ever say it's natural, but like it's really natural to want stability and safety and like all of those kinds of things. I think that there's a conversation that's being had in terms of like hoarding, right? Like hoarding wealth and all of that, that I can't completely turn off and just say like, oh, fuck it. You know, it's like, no, there is. But I also, my friend yesterday, we were talking and they were like, when Black women are given, have some excess, have the ability to kind of like move up a little bit, we've literally been programmed to give that right back almost immediately to our own communities. But yeah, I was like, with more that you have, or with the space that I might have, or with the, like, I just think about like how that expands or changes my purpose and I, or my responsibility in this world. And I don't believe that that is for the worse. So it's like the end result you want, the little version of you is saying, that's okay to want that. But then there's like this thing in between that gets you feeling like, no, I'm supposed to do it this way or that way. And that's what I kind of meant when I said, like, I think that we need to be able to hold on to more nuance than seeing things as completely in like polarizing binaries, right? Like, how can we hold space for that complexity of feelings? For you, it's like, how can you hold space for yourself to be like as emotional as you need to be and not like shame yourself for having those emotions? And also, I have never witnessed you having quote unquote big reactions to things. Like, sometimes I think you're like dramatic, but that's, you're just my friend. And you're, sometimes that's you. But you know what I mean? It's like, I've never seen this part of you and I'm curious about her. Like, I want to see this side of you that I feel like you haven't shown me. I'm sure you've shown others and I'm shady about that, but you know, like, what are we?
yes and no, like some of it.
Mm.
Yeah. But I keep it pretty, a lot of it pretty
tight-locked.
Guarded. Yeah. And I'm interested to ask too, because I have a feel like when you say that you've sort of seen me be dramatic, like, what do you mean by that? Or like in what
more
ways?
In play? Like, more in, like, yeah. More in, like being fake offended about something. But I'm like, I do that too. But then I'm also like, we both have strong emotions. Like, I think that we both are, like, deeply emotional people. But we just don't. We don't. I'm with you. Like, I keep that shit on lock and key. Blame it on my Scorpio rising. It's just like, I'm a private
Scorpio
person.
Scorpio placements.
Listen, there's secrets. You don't talk about it. You don't bring it out into the open. But at the same time, like you said, the ease at which you're able to create space for others' emotions, the ease in which I'm able to tell people the truth, their truth, letting people know what the truth is, but I can't accept my own. It's like bringing a mirror to yourself is so fucking hard. Right? Because it's just so much easier to like to say it with conviction, but not explore like how deep that conviction for yourself goes, you know, the depths of that, like where is that really coming from? And are you listening?
Yeah, I guess I just, when I try to imagine what would my life be like if I was more able to allow these parts of myself to be seen, I feel and like I'd be so much more alive in a lot of ways. I think for one thing, it must take so much energy for me to keep that locked away.
Yeah.
You know, to just keep that in. That takes actually a lot of energy. I don't even know what it would be like to have that energy freed up, but I have kind of some kind of like intuitive sense of like how much would be freed up by that. And I also just think my life would be a lot richer and more vibrant with closer, more intimate relationships if all of these things could be seen. And there would be more conflict in my life, I'm sure, but I think when I was younger, I was really afraid of conflict, you know, and I learned how to avoid that at all costs. And I learned, you know, a part of doing that was locking away my anger. And I've now, you know, done so much work to be able to feel angry, but I still, so often, that's one of the many emotions that I keep to myself. And I think, yeah, I would have more conflict in my life, but I'd also have a lot more closeness.
Yeah. And more space within yourself. Yeah. Again, thinking about some of my own diary entries, I wrote in like 2015, like I believe that it's important for me to like express how I feel. Like I don't want other people's reactions to my feelings to be the reason that I can't articulate how they make me feel. But there's so much risk involved, you know what I mean? With like letting people know how they've really affected you. And this goes back to the question we had a few episodes ago of like, are you afraid to fight with your friends? It's like that huge risk of, will this person think that I'm too much? And it's not just about like fighting with this like anger, sad thing. It's also about like what actually makes you like excited. You know, like, are you telling your friends and people in your life who love you and support you, like what you actually deeply love or crave or desire or any of those things that might lead to conflict still, but it would just also be like, oh shit, I didn't know that about you. I didn't even know that you liked that. I didn't even know that that was something that you're interested in. I didn't even like, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's like the spaciousness that it creates in your relationships, but then the space within yourself to be like, I let the feeling go. Like, I don't have to be alone in the feeling. I don't have to. And I read that Dr. Yabarmati was talking about like, it's not necessarily, and this is a bad paraphrase, it's not necessarily people going through hard things that makes them traumatized. It's people going through hard things alone. So like that the like experiencing deep emotional feelings on your own has such an imprint on you versus if you felt that deep emotional feeling and then you had a place to go to like place it or share it, then it's like we now have a memory of this thing that affected you and me, and we've moved through it, and you weren't alone in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how radically different would that be? I think it's hard to even imagine that in some ways, right? When it's so different from what we've experienced. So we've been sort of answering this question, but I want to ask it again to see if there's more that comes up for you of what you might gain from letting the parts of yourself that you hide be seen.
I think that I would have, I got to echo what you said. It's like that space, but it's the spaciousness of being able to envision and visualize what it is that I do deeply want. Because if I'm spending so much of my time denying myself the feeling or saying to myself, I shouldn't want that or whatever, it's like blocking my ability to actualize that thing. I think that it would free me up and give me the space to actually be on the path of what it is that I want, as opposed to, because I'm in self-denial. The Instagram post and the quote that you so eloquently offered in our last episode that like self-denial is not a virtue was like rang true for weeks. It's been on my mind because it's like, what do I think that I gain from like, what is it that I gain? Do I actually feel closer to my generation? Do I feel like I'm doing the work more by suppressing that desire to have more, you know, stability or comfort or anything like that? Is that what that is? Like, what am I gaining on that front? And so like almost reversing your question to myself, it's like, I'm hurting myself more, right? I'm like denying myself what I deeply want and then shaming myself for that too. And that doesn't bring me any closer to like collective healing and, you know, collective liberation and personal healing. That makes me resentful. That makes me angry, right? Totally. So the space to envision what I want, the space to accept that I am and we are all deserving of comfort and stability, because I would tell that to other people, but like again, believing it for yourself is a whole other thing.
Yeah. We have no idea how much we're really blocking from ourselves by keeping all of these defenses in place. I think so often when we are operating from a place of fear or shame, in order to keep doing that and in order to avoid those things that feel so scary to be with, we necessarily just suppress and block so much, and not only within ourselves, but what's coming to us from other people. I feel like it's kind of one of those like woo-woo, like spiritual concepts that actually is, you know, maybe true on a spiritual level, but is certainly also true just on the kind of
material,
like, emotional level.
Yeah.
That you can't receive what you're afraid to see.
Yeah. And then it's like also the universe, spirit, ancestors, all of that just puts it in front of you, right? Mm. Like puts it in front of you in a way that you can't ignore it. And suddenly you're like, why is witnessing somebody else having that or somebody else embodying that so offensive to me, right? It's like,
yeah,
or stir something up in me that's like jealousy, and or maybe it's just you get over, like not overly emotional because we're talking about emotions, but you have a even bigger reaction to other people having that thing, that freedom that you want so desperately, but you've denied yourself, and for lots of reasons that you've denied yourself. But it's like, again, how does this serve you? It doesn't.
Totally. Wow. Yeah. So I want to ask one last question. Is there one small step that you could take to integrate this part more or give it some space to see the light of day?
I think the small step is saying it on this podcast, like saying what it is, like speaking it into existence, like speaking it, you know, just articulating it as opposed to it being the hidden thing that you feel uncomfortable or shame, you know. I still feel uncomfortable, but I talked about it, and I feel like the more I spend taking the time to talk about all of the underlying feelings about it, I think that that's beginning to do the necessary work to like walk in the direction of what I deeply want. How about you, though? Because I realize I'm like, oh, did I get to ask you that same question before about like, you know, what would you gain and what can you do to, you know, what's the baby step, the small step?
Yeah, I think the small step is that I have people in my life that I know actively want to hear my quote unquote irrational, over the top, like big feelings.
Yeah.
And I think that letting myself have them and letting myself express them, even if it's, you know, a text here or there to express them, it goes a long way in making me feel like more of who I am.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I better be receiving more text messages about things that are out of context and just your personal reflections. Okay.
I'll start sending you like
voice notes
and texts. And then I'll also send you my Oscar the Grouch gifts that I
now
love, because I've been in such a rage
yeah,
that I'm like, I'll send you the angry, like, I can't believe this is happening, blah, 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 blah. And then I'll send you the Oscar the Grouch gif that's live footage of me
raging,
sending this text.
We love it. Please.
So I want to finish by reading a quote from Tanya Denise Fields in an amazing essay called Dirty Business, The Messy Affair of Rejecting Shame, which is, it's in a compilation called You Are Your Best Thing, which was edited by Toronto.
I'm reading that. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Oh, cool. Amazing.
I'm also reading Unbound and a bunch of other books. So anyways.
Amazing. Continue. Okay. Yes. Well, you will see this, and I think you're going to love this entire, I thought of you many times while reading it.
Okay. Give it to us.
Rejecting shame is a messy and nasty affair. Dirty business. It requires some serious shadow work to unhinge yourself from the manifestation of hundreds of years of foolishness that shows up in every facet of your life. You commit yourself to being uncomfortable. I committed myself to being uncomfortable. You commit yourself to some of the worst emotional pain you have ever felt. I committed myself to that pain. You want to literally crawl out of your skin. It is not linear or exponential. And sometimes you realize that shame, hiding, shrinking, suffering is infinitely easier in the short term than the arduous and intentional work of getting spiritually and emotionally free. But you curate an abundant community that reminds you of what is on the other side, that loves on you, that pours into you, that holds you, and sometimes shakes the shit out of you. You stay in therapy. You say the affirmations. You embrace it all because it's in the fire that you will be forged. It is there that you will find peace and joy and liberation. It is in the fire that you destroy shame.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.